Good evening and welcome to Hot Topics from the Soul. I am your host, Dr. Valerie Parker Hagen, and I have my co-host.
Good evening, Dr. J.R. Ficklin, and so glad to be with you on this beautiful Tuesday afternoon.
A few years ago, about 26 years ago, I met an extraordinary man that transformed my life. I went to hear him speak at an event in Miami, and what he said was, in order to be successful, you must be willing to do the things today others won't do. In order to have the things tomorrow others won't have. When he spoke those words, it was electrifying through my body, my soul, and I got a new jump start on life. And it is because of him that I have been the success that I am today. And I'd like to introduce and bring before you Mr. Les Brown.
Hello, how are you?
I'm so excited. We've had an incredible journey.
Yes, we have. I was just a little boy when we got started.
I don't know about all that because I was the one that was the baby.
You know,
I don't understand how it is that we've been on this journey for 26 years and you're looking all fine and dapper. Your hair is growing. I'm losing mine. Well, your beard is filled in. Your eyebrows are straight. And here I am.
Well, you know, the movie House Party, Kid and Play, I'm Kid. So I'm so glad to be able to be here with you and Dr. J.R. Ficklin. And I just feel that this time where we are, you know, my daughter, Dr. Ona Brown, she said gaps are from God. So this is the time where we have literally had the rug snatched out from under us. And yes, we have time to refuel, to recalibrate, and to rethink our lives. And it's been an exciting time. There's a quote that I love very much, that many times in life, when the very foundation of your life has been shaken, at the very core, we run to God, only to discover that it's God that's doing the shaking.
Yes. We've had a lot of shakings on this road we've traveled. I remember like 26 years ago when I heard you in Miami, you were helping a friend of yours with a campaign. And my cousin Debbie said to me, I need you to meet this man, this motivational speaker, Les Brown. And I was like, Les Brown, who is that? You don't know who Les Brown is? I was like, no. She said he was married to Gladys Knight. I said, okay, let me see who this person was that was married to Gladys Knight. So that's how she got me to come. And the rest is history. I tell you, when I heard you speak, it was electrifying because I was in a place of my life where I just came out of a turbulent divorce. I had just got my apartment from being homeless. And here I was beginning again. So your message to me that day was so timely and relevant.
But you know something about you, Valerie. You're driven. You are an unstoppable person. And there's an energy about you. I believe that they're winners, they're losers, and they're winners who've not discovered how to win. And with the right assistance, with the right support, with the right guidance, they'll be able to go to a place within themselves that they can't go by themselves and be able to accomplish things that they don't even realize. So it's been an honor. It's been really a two-way relationship. I've helped you and you've helped me. And one of the good things about you, you check me. You know, you're only 3 feet high, but you know, dynamite comes in small packages.
Wow. Tell those that are listening one of the most memorable moments that we've shared on this journey together.
Oh my goodness. You know where I gotta go. It was the most embarrassing experience I've ever had as a speaker. I was upstairs and one of my speakers I'd been coaching was downstairs and they kept calling me, please come down. She's about to speak. She's about to speak. And I could not find my belt. I'm looking all over the room. So I decided to catch her presentation. So I left my belt. I put my hand in my pocket to hold my pants up. And so I came in the back and I was seated and I was watching and just making some mental notes of how well her presentation was going. And then unexpected, they called me to come up and speak right after her. So I got up, had my hand in my pocket, and I started my presentation. And I said, you know, sometimes you got to pursue your dream like it's the last bus at night. And I took my hand out of my pocket and started walking across the room, and my pants fell down up to my ankles.
I was so mad at you.
And everybody saw my little Mickey Mouse underwear. So I didn't know
what to remember that event.
I looked out, I was shocked. And the audience, they were quiet at first, and then they bust out laughing. And so at that time, I was close to the table. I kneeled down and went close and crawled over to this table and continued my speech. Fortunately, after around 30 minutes, a guy comes over and gives me his belt.
That was Dr. J. That was Dr. Thicklin.
Dr. J that gave you the belt.
Oh, man. Great. Thank you.
You lived up to your name. Les, you never stopped talking. You kept proceeding.
I just I just kept talking, and I was surprised. I'm here saying, I'm talking, and the audience was there listening and taking notes. And finally, the Lord touched you. It came and gave me a belt. So I can put my belt on and then stand up because I couldn't stand up and put my hands in my pocket to pull my pants up. Oh, my God. Thank you, man. Oh, my goodness. And I saw Valerie in the back. And she just walked out the room and just threw her hand up.
I was so mad with you. I didn't know what to do because it was my event. I have a foundation, The Soul of a Woman. And I had you as a speaker. And I'm like, well, one good thing I said to myself, that it wasn't one of our major clients, but it was still important to me that you were speaking and then you dropped your pants at my event. I made you pay dearly for that, Mr. Brown.
I tell you, I never had that happen to me before. Oh my God.
The money I was going to pay you, I did not pay you that day. I said, you didn't deserve a salary.
I travel with seven belts. You know, seven is my lucky number. I'm never without a belt now.
When I first started working with you, I created the First Family of Motivation Tour, and it consisted of Dr. Ona Brown and John Leslie Brown. Can you talk about one of the memorable moments for that?
I was in Detroit, and so John Leslie and Ona, they were with me, and they always had these little notes that they carried with them. So I went up first and I was seated in the minister's chair. And when they came up, I said, may I look at your notes for just a moment? And they each gave me their notes. I took the notes, I pulled them up, I tore them up. I said, tonight you will hear the voices.
That was in Philadelphia.
Yes, oh, that was Philadelphia.
Okay. Yes, it was Philadelphia.
You will hear the voices. And they said, what did you do? I said, you don't need the notes. You will hear the voices. And Ona, she said, oh, my God, John Leslie, he never gets nervous. I don't understand it. I remember when I was at T.D. Jakes' Manpower Conference. It was 15,000 people. And we were backstage, and I was pacing back and forth. And he said, why are you walking back and forth? I said, I'm nervous. I said, there are 15,000 men out there waiting for us to come out. This is a manpower conference. This is our first time here. I said, aren't you nervous? He said, no. I said, why? He said, I don't know. We just go out there and speak. And sure enough, he came out there and he did his piece. I was blown away. Yeah, he doesn't know what nervous is, but I was nervous. I'm always nervous in any type of speaking situation because every audience, they have their own personality. When I spoke in the Georgia Dome, I saw it the other day. I've never seen it all the way through because I get nervous watching it. But I see it as a person who's seeing it for the first time because I don't remember giving the speech. And I'm very critical of myself, but I said, that dude is bad. So I've only gotten one third of the way through it. But I remember when Mike Williams said to me, you got this, Brownie. You got this. And I think it's very important that you have someone in your life that believe in you until it kickstarts your belief in yourself. Mm-hmm. And I believe in his belief in me. And I knew the way he looked at me and he said, you got this, make your mother proud. That I knew that he would only say that to me if he knew and felt that I can do it. But I did not know at the time. That's why courage is so very important. It's important now. I remember spending a full day, one of the most blessed experiences I've ever had with Maya Angelou. And she said, of all the virtues, courage is the most important. She said, nothing happens without courage. And when he said, you got this, it gave me the courage. I went to another place and I had this mindset, I'm going to command this audience of 80,000 people. I invite everybody, if they have not seen it, to go and watch it and the strategies that I use. Les Brown speaking in the Georgia Dome. It's a speech that a lot of people around the world have seen that. And millions of people have enjoyed it and had a transformative impact on them.
Yes, it has definitely transformed my life. One of the best series you ever did that I love is Choosing Your Future. How did that one come about?
I was going to give my last series a speech that I was not going to give any more speeches because King World had recruited me to do a talk show and they paid me $5 million to do the show and $1 million not to talk, not to give any more speeches. They said, what it takes to do an interview, you have to create intimacy between you and that person. What it takes to give a speech, you have to talk to the last person in the back of the room. And I said, well, I'm not going to stop speaking. He said, we'll give you $1 million. I said, I said, okay. So I did this series. I said, I'll do this series and that's it. It's possible. It's necessary. It's you, it's hard, it's worth it, it's done. And I decided that once I got through with that, that would be the last speech I would give in this space. But it wasn't supposed to be. You know, a job is something that you get paid for. A calling is something that you're made for. And even after they canceled the show, I said to myself, I enjoyed this. Money was good, chauffeur-driven limousine, $3,500 a month condominium, but this is not my calling. Mm-hmm. And I would try and get another sponsor. I just went back to speaking, doing that which I'm supposed to do.
And thank God you did, because I have witnessed personally the thousands of lives that you've transformed over the years, and it has just been an incredible, amazing journey. I'm connected with some of the people that you've impacted, and they reach out to me, and they're like how you've transformed their lives and their children's lives, and, you know, from generation to generation. And there's so much going on right now with this pandemic, and people are really struggling mentally to compose themselves, to hold on to that glimmer of hope that there's limitations that the church has presented that they're not able to grasp onto because they want to know how to deal with real life. What would you say to them in that situation?
Be of good courage. Because in fearful situations where your life is threatened, and we're in that kind of space now, I like something that Zig Ziglar said. He said, most people in a fearful situation, and used an acronym of fear, he said, they forget everything and run. Mm. But there are few people who face everything and rise. God has not given us a spirit of fear, but a spirit of power and of love and a sound mind. So beginning to know and to live from your faith. Faith not tested can't be trusted. And so it's easy to have faith when you have your bills paid, your marriage is working out, your children acting like they have good sense, your health is strong. I remember when Dr. Alfred Golson said, Mr. Brown, you have fourth stage cancer. I said, I do? He said, yes, and it metastasized to seven areas of your body. That's why you have that large swelling on the back of your neck. Cancer's eaten 43% of that T1 vertebrae. I said, oh. And I said, can you give me a second opinion? He said, yes. And you're ugly, too. I said, what? I said, no, you didn't go there. You did not call me ugly. Oh, my God. You man, that's wrong. And then he said, but you got this. I never tell any of my patients that you're terminally ill. What I say is that my abilities, my skills, my knowledge have terminated. Now you and God will determine the prognosis. I just determined the diagnosis. And when I left his office, I left there not with a heart full of fear, because what your program do and when you speak and when Dr. JR speak, what we do is distract, dispute, and inspire. How people live their lives as a result of the story they believe about themselves. So he distracted me from the collective thinking, be ye not conformed to this world, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Cancer is the most feared word in seven different languages. So rather than leaving his office with a mind full of fear, I left with a mind full of optimism. People need faith.
Yes.
They need courage. They need optimism. And they need skills, because yes, we're in a new place. We're in this place where Einstein said, the thinking that has brought me this far has created some problems that this thinking can't solve. When I got back from Dubai right before the lockdown, and when I speak internationally, I get six figures. And the announcement about the coronavirus, it took the smile off my face.
I tried to get you not to go.
I know, but I was going to get that money then. You know, what gives? $225,000, a good garden and a healthy hog, and you can make it through the winter. All right.
I know. But I was willing to give it up, give up the commission and all.
I know it. So, but I got back just in time. And then I remember the disciples said to Jesus, they couldn't catch any fish. And he said, throw your net on the other side. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm teaching people how through the comfort of their home, in front of the computer, virtually, how to earn money with their knowledge, with their skills, with their story. The computer is not asymptomatic. It does not sneeze on you or cough on you. You could be near it, and the kind of virus it has, it won't affect human beings. And so to be here and to be able to train people and talk to people just like I'm talking to you. And I do 3 to 4 presentations every day. And because the computer, it eliminates geography. And so this is a new tool. People say opportunity knocks on every door. No, the Bible says watch as well as pray. Opportunity stands by waiting silently for you to recognize it. And so I decided I'm going to learn this. I'm going to take advantage of this. Now, earlier, I came on live. Everybody saw it but me. But I didn't mind making mistakes. I believe that anything that's worth doing is worth doing badly. Worth doing right if you know how to do it. But if you don't know how to do it, it's worth doing badly until you get it right. Because at the end of the day, if you're not willing to learn, no one can help you. But if you're willing to learn, no one can stop you. So at 75, my goal is to finish strong. At 75, my goal is to rob the cemetery, as Miles Monroe would say, of my dreams, of my talents, of my coaching skills, of my voice and my stories, and to finish strong.
And you finishing strong with all your hair.
No one does it better. I mean, Les, over the years, you have impacted so many different generations. When I go back and listen at so many of your things, going back to cassettes, CDs, yeah, you have done it. My sons, when they went off to college, I gave them your package series, Dealing with Freedom. And I said, you make sure that you listen to it, because I won't be there. But if you can listen to the motivation from this man here, it will transform your life. When you listen, the great late Dr. Miles Monroe, I was listening to him the other day, and he referenced you. He talked to the people about their knowledge and filling your mind with knowledge. When you get in your car, you got to listen to the right thing. And what did he say? He said, when I get in my car, I'm listening to people like Les Brown because he's giving me something to say. Les, the thing that has been incredible over all of these years is that not only have you remained relevant, but there are so many people both in the faith world, the corporate world, and everywhere have learned from not only your style, your skill, your gift, but literally your example. So as you are finishing strong, you're also building this army of people who looks back and say that, listen, Les Brown said something, Les Brown demonstrated something that has ignited me in a way that I can't stop. What do you say about that? Because literally you are the godfather. You're the godfather of motivational speaking.
I am humbled by it. I started out with 5 people in my mother's living room in Liberty City, 19th Avenue and Northwest 55th Terrace, when I resigned from the Ohio legislature to go back to Miami. My sister called me. I was a state legislator. I just got reelected my 3rd time. And she said, Leslie, are you sitting down? And I said, what's wrong with Mama? And she said, Mama has breast cancer. They said it's terminal. I said, I'll be there. She said, oh, you don't have to come. They have all type of nursing homes in Dade County. I said, listen to me, Margaret Ann. I'm coming. I'll be there. And Mama never wanted to be in a nursing home, and I was not going to allow that. I was the chairman of the Human Resource Committee, the Education Committee. I passed 14 bills my first term. I was going to run for the Senate and then for Congress and statewide office. I enjoyed politics, but I loved my mama. I always tell audiences before I speak, I'm here because of 2 women. God took me out of my biological mother's womb and placed me in the heart of my adopted mother. One gave me life and the other one gave me love. And when I came back to Miami and I rang the doorbell, a friend of my mother's was there named Mildred. I said, hello, Miss Mildred. And she came to the door. She said, oh my God. She said, Mamie, Leslie's here. And I heard my mother say, I knew he would come. I knew my boy would come. And I realized something, that just as where we are, God is in the midst of this. And what I mean by this, because of that experience, there are things that happen to us. But as we go forward into the future, we look back and we realize they happened for us. That's why it's courage, optimism, and skill. Because I had the courage to walk away from a promising political career. A job is something you get paid for. Calling is something you're made for. I had the courage to live my making. I had a spirit of optimism that some way, somehow, I'm going to find a way to take care of my mother, just like she did with me and my brothers and sisters, single woman raising 7 children that she didn't give birth to. She always found a way. I remember a reporter asking her, how did you know that you can raise 7 children by yourself? And she said, I believe that the Lord will make a way somehow. And so that has been my belief in the things that I tackle. But the other thing is, I was willing to learn another skill. I'd never been involved in politics before. I learned that skill. All of us are born the same way, dumb, naked, and speechless. And then I went to a motivational event and I saw these guys speaking and I said, hey, I said, and the guy who opened for Zig Ziglar, he was boring. The room was quiet as a graveyard between funerals. And I said, man, that guy was boring. And I was seated next to his brother-in-law. I didn't even know it. And he said, you ought to be that boring and make the kind of money he made. And I said, how much did they pay him? He said, $5,000. I looked at my watch. He'd been speaking for 45 minutes. I said, I can do this.
Yes.
And I'd put it off for 14 years because I don't have a college education, no experience working in corporations. I was labeled educable mental retarded in the 5th grade, put back from the 5th grade to the 4th grade and fell again in the 8th grade at Booker T. Washington High School in Miami. 87% of the kids that are put in special education are African-American males. They determine the number of prisons that they will build based upon the failure rate of African-American males in the 3rd grade. But I believe that if you can track failure, you can also track success. Yeah. And so I was willing to learn. I invested in myself. And I'm so glad I selected this area. There's an article that came out last month in Fast Magazine. They said the most important skill that you can have is the ability to communicate. They said that it is far more important than your technical skills. This is the attention economy. And Warren Buffett said, the inability to communicate is like winking at a woman in the dark. Nothing happens.
Wow.
Oh, behave, baby. So I have a ball when I speak. I love making people feel good. I love making them laugh. I love inspiring them. I love giving them a reason to go within themselves and find them the true self, because you can't read the label when you're locked in the box. Paul said, I must die daily, that we all must die daily. To give birth to parts of ourself that we don't want to take to the cemetery with us. That's why Miles Monroe said, rob the cemetery of your dreams, of your talents, of your abilities.
Wow. Wow. Well, you have done that. You've done that. And that's what's amazing is that your message. Now, there are many motivational speakers, and this is what I believe make you the godfather, because you have had the ability to connect with people on so many different levels. For those that are broke, you've been there. For those that have had money, you've been there. For those that have been challenged with sickness, you've been there. For those that have been down on their faith, you've been there. You have had the ability to communicate a message. And I have to say this, in a world that oftentimes preachers don't understand motivational speakers, you're probably the most if they, as they say in music, more preachers sample Les Brown. And what Les Brown has said than any other motivational speaker that I know of. Because your relative, you've said some things that are there, is undeniable truth. And when we look at it, listen, we understand that either we embrace it and run with it, or we retire and say that I'm just not up for it. But we can't say that it's not true. You've been relevant. How do one continue to stay relevant over this span of time?
Well, when I got into the speaking industry, I hired a mentor named Mike Williams to become my coach. And he said something. The speaking industry has been governed by the Dale Carnegie course. They teach people, tell them what you're going to tell them, and then tell them what you told them. My favorite book says, in all thy getting, get understanding. And he said, Brownie, never let what you want to say get in the way of what your audience want to hear. And so when I train speakers, I teach them how to use their story to strategically transform the audience individually and collectively. If information could change people, everybody would be skinny, rich, and happy. The difference between me and ministers, they preach the gospel about Jesus. I preach the gospel that Jesus preached. They sell the messenger. I sell his message. And so when you look at the church, there's more poverty in the church than any place else. And that always baffled me. Why is that? Because man's faith in God is measured by his belief in himself. When the disciples were amazed at the miracles that Jesus performed, he said, these things ye shall do, mm-hmm. and greater things shall ye do. So we are here to do the greater work. We are here to live a life that will outlive us. And we're going to fix it. He's given us everything we need. We are made in the likeness and image of God and have been given authority and dominion over everything on the face of the earth. However, even though we are made in the likeness and image of God and been given authority and dominion over everything on the face of the earth, we will never exercise authority and dominion over our lives until we exercise authority and dominion over what we are not. We are living a misplaced life. We live in a culture that has been designed to destroy ourselves, to diminish us, to marginalize our vision of ourselves. Dr. Carter G. Woodson, come forth, please. He said, if you can determine what a man shall think, you never have to concern yourself with what he will do. He said, if you can make a man feel inferior, you never have to compel him to seek an inferior status, for he will seek it himself. And if you can make a man feel justly an outcast, you never have to order him to go to the back door. He'll go without being told. And if there's no door, his very nature will demand one. So that's why it used to be a capital offense if we got caught trying to learn how to read, because we were in a culture that wanted to keep us ignorant of who we were. Because once you know who you are, that truth will set you free from living yes. a small life. And you can't fit a big dream into a small mind. Help me, somebody. Shovel A, Hunter, Hunter.
Let the church say amen. All right, right, Reverend. You know, when we first connected, I was writing my book. It was called Love Shouldn't Hurt. But then after traveling with you 7 years later, after we first connected, I released it, and it was entitled From the Soul of a Woman, Love Shouldn't Hurt. And from that book, I've sold over 10,000 hard copies, and it's about my journey with domestic violence. And one of the things you brought forth and said to me was that I had a voice and there were people going through the same thing I was going through, and they needed to know how to come out. And I could not wrap my head around it, because when you're in a domestic violence situation, it's embarrassing, it's painful, and the struggle is truly real. So there are people that are like me that feel that whatever path they're on right now, that their life will never rebound from it. They'll find themselves stuck in a place. So what would you say to them, being that you activated me 26 years ago?
Well, let's go back. Let's use an example, because I want people to listen very closely. No tests, no testimony. I said earlier that faith not tested can't be trusted. We're going through a test right now. And God is in the midst of this. This is an incredible time. So just if you don't write another book, and just take your book that you wrote years ago. I had a revelation the other day. You know, I started the Greatness Center, and I walked away from it because of the fear of failure. I revisited that. And I gave my first message, my first sermon, this past Sunday morning, with a spirit of fear of success. And I heard this voice saying, do it. And I'm saying, but Lord, my past, the person I've been for so many years, do it. Do it. The person who you once were, he no longer lives there. He's dead. You're condemning the wrong person. Do it. Look back, not with guilt and regret. Just look back and say, that's who you were. He's dead. Do it. Say yes. And I decided, I'm starting with the Greatness Center again. And I did the sermon 10 o'clock Monday morning. Sunday morning. I'll do it every Sunday. But let's take you right now. Domestic violence has increased over 40%.
Yes.
So if we take just now your message, then just like I walked away from the Quest Center of Truth, which was the Greatness Center ultimately, and we did one, work and focus on your message from your story. Two, create the book. The book is already there. Three, create an online course teaching women how to begin to develop a sense of self, where they come to believe, I deserve more. How to create an exit plan, an escape plan to another life. And so when they, one, fortify their faith, build mental resolve. That's what it takes to get out of a domestic situation. Two, you have to upgrade your skill set so that you can become independent. You want a man, but you don't need a man. And three, becoming a part of a community, a collaborative, achievement-driven, supportive relationships. Just with those three, you can. And leveraging the work that you helped me build my career. You can, leveraging my name and reputation. It's about relationships. People say, it's not what you know, it's who you know. That's not exactly true. Who you know and what they know about you. I know you to be a woman of integrity, a good mother, a dedicated wife, and a person who's gone through hell. And you came out better rather than bitter. So I'm willing to leverage my name and reputation for you. And you and I can teach others who are now listening to us and watching us to know that there is hope, because knowledge is the new currency. Your ability to communicate, the hardship, the pain, the things that you've gone through, will become the survival guide for people who are going through a living hell right now. People who are trapped with their abusers. Women who are going into the drugstore and the pharmacists are listening for code language to indicate that they are living with an abuser and they need some help. everything, all things work together for good for those who love God and for those who are called according to his purpose. When we look for ways in which we can help each other, help somebody and help yourself, because what you give is what you get. We've all been in situations that wasn't us. I mean, you know what hell I went through. If everybody yes. read my book called You Gotta Be Hungry, somebody almost took me out. And yes. my kids and you had to rescue me. I mean, I have tears of gratitude. I could have died. I'm only here because of God's grace and mercy. You know, and so the other night, I could hear that song by Shekinah Glory. Yes, Lord.
Yes, Lord.
Yes, I was in such pain from cancer and sciatica pain and you and my knees. You helped me. And I don't know if I would be able to come back from that, but God saw fit. He saw fit for me to come back and to be here at this point in time. And we're positioned to do the greater work. We're positioned. We're in this place because he wants us to be here. We have favor with God. Otherwise, we'll be taking a dirt nap.
Yes. As yeah. I said, we have had such an incredible journey, and people don't know you to be a philanthropist, that you have literally given away millions and millions of dollars to help empower people and families, the countless families that you've supported and how many kids you put through college. You don't just, you know, talk the talk, but you walk that walk. You've sold it to so many people's lives. I mean, I've witnessed it. And as a matter of fact, because of you, I started my foundation From the Soul of a Woman, because of the fact that there are so many people that need, and, you know, sometimes they can't even speak it because their positioning and where they are is so hard that they can't even speak it. But because of discernment and watching you and see how you maneuver, and you secretly go and give people, not for recognition, but because you can. You say, I asked you, I said, why do you do that? You said, because I can. Mm-hmm. And so when I sow into people's lives, I've given away a lot of money too. Yeah. I mean, sometimes I just be led to just put money in people's hands. And I do that because I'm reminded of God's grace and mercy that he's shown towards you on many occasions. And when you were struggling with the cancer and you would get up on stage, people wouldn't know that you were going through excruciating pain, and yet you would give and give. And then when we get back to the hotel, you can barely get out of your clothes. I had to pull your jacket off, and you'd be like, Valerie, I just got to rest. Just give me a minute, baby. Just give me a minute. But they have no idea the enormous heart that you have for people and wanting to see them make it. But one of the other things you also say is that people won't participate in their own rescue.
Yeah, a lot of people will not participate in their own rescue. And I just feel that when we look at where we are now and what people are challenged with, one of my favorite quotes is, when things go wrong, don't go with them. That it's easy to give up when you're facing adversity. It's easy to give up when you can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. And I say the reason that you can't see the light is because you are the light. And if you commit thy works unto the Lord, and thy thoughts should be established, and all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy path. If you keep moving, nothing works until you work. If you keep moving, there are two types of people in this world, those who work and those who watch them. If you keep moving, things are going to get better.
Yes.
Things are going to turn out in your favor. I know that to be true. You know, my children had to do an intervention for me. I want all of you to go to IamHungryLesBrown.com and order my new book.
Yes.
When you read it, you will be shocked. You say, oh my God, I had no idea he'd been through this. And that's why I'm so grateful. That's why this place where I am is to do the greater work. That's why Dr. JR, who could be doing something else, but he said, I'm coming on tonight and be with you at last. That we have choices. And I believe that as much as he has chosen to be here and you've chosen to be here, that you were chosen to be here to do the greater work. There are people listening to us, and it's a God moment. It's they could be someplace else, but they're not. Why? Because it's their time. And with courage, optimism, and increasing their skills, they'll carve out a tunnel of hope through the mountains of despair. I'm on fire tonight.
Yes, you are.
Absolutely.
And talking about your book, You've Got to Be Hungry, there was a chapter in there you wrote where you and your mother were walking through the park and you were assaulted by a police officer.
No, he didn't assault me. I let her hand go. Mm-hmm. Downtown Miami, about 90 degrees. I was around 5 years old. And I saw these white kids drinking from a water fountain. And I was thirsty and I let her hand go. And I ran and stood in line. And after they got through drinking water, I got to the water fountain and I started drinking water. And I heard my mother say, Leslie, stop. And she grabbed me by the back of my neck and slung me to the ground and started punching me like I was a grown man in my face and my head and my mouth. And I said, Mama, this crazed look in her eyes. I said, Mama, it's me, it's me. And at that moment, a white cop came. He had a nightstick in his hand.
Right.
And he kept
on. She intervened.
Yeah, he kept on hitting it in his hand. He said, okay, you beat that little nigger boy enough. Now I won't have to beat him. Mm-hmm. And he walked away and he looked back. I was on the ground. My eye was closed. My mouth was bleeding. And he just laughed. That'll learn you. And Mama, she picked me up and she started crying. And she said, Leslie, I'm so sorry, baby. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to beat you like that. I saw that white policeman's face get red. And he was coming towards you with his nightstick. And had he hit you with that nightstick, he would have had to kill me because I would have fought him until he killed me. And I would have left you and your brothers and sisters to fend for yourself. And I did that to distract him. Please forgive me. And I said, Mama, it didn't hurt that badly. But if you just kiss me right here, I'll feel better. During that time, you fell down. Mama would say, you know, let me kiss this.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am. What about you too? And what I realized at that time, I lived in two worlds. You know,
yes.
Ages of 0 and 5. According to Dr. Martin Seligman from the University of Minnesota, he said, there's a voice that's formulated in our heart. That voice is yes or it's no. During 0 and 5, we know what's available to us and what's not available to us. And so this culture that we live in, it is designed to hold us down. It goes beyond systemic racism. The culture is designed to destroy your sense of self. And once you do that, once a person sense of self has been destroyed. You have robbed them of their ability to live a productive life, to live a life of impact, a life of significance. And that's why the work that Dr. JR is doing and what you're doing and what I've been involved in is that the most important thing that we can do is help to cultivate a strong sense of self. Mark Twain said that the two most important days in a man or woman's life, the day that they're born and the day that they realize why they were born. And so we have been sold a lie that we are inferior. And there is a report came out 3 weeks ago from the Federal Reserve. And the article said, stunningly, a white, and listen to this, stunningly, a white ex-felon high school dropout has more of a chance and creates three times more wealth than a black student who graduates from college and has no criminal background. Stunningly.
Wow.
And thousands of debt to get a college education. But that white high school dropout with a criminal record has more of a chance of getting a job and creating three times more wealth than that black college student who graduates with thousands of dollars in student loans. And that's why I say, you gotta be hungry. Those who hunger and thirst after righteousness, right thinking, right vision, right words, right relationships, and the right skills, those who are hungry shall be filled. And so this is our time. This is our time, even 45 and all of his madness. This is our time. Come on, yeah.
Absolutely.
Because we are awake. God has not left us. He's still in this mix up in here. You know, he's still in charge. And he doesn't always take charge because we have a role in this. I like what Mary McLeod Bethune said. She said, pray as if everything depends upon God. And work as if everything depends upon us. I used to be so broke, walk past a bank and trip the alarm. My children would answer the phone and say, my daddy say, hey, ho. I found out a long time ago that the fastest way to get back on your feet is to miss three car payments. And you can't even hide that car now.
They got the tracker.
They get tracked. I think that should be outlawed. That shit, that's wrong. And saving my privacy.
You've led an awesome career, and one of the things you've also done is you have trained platinum speakers. Now you have a Prodigy program that people can find out about that on your website, Les Brown Prodigies, and of course your book. Can you tell me one memorable moment you had during one of our trainings when we were doing platinums?
Yes. One of the memorable moments is when I was working with Mike Jones.
Oh, wow.
Who's been blind because of a medical mistake.
Yeah.
Since he was 10 years old. And working with Mike came from Philadelphia. He heard one of my motivational speeches. And he came from Philadelphia to Chicago without a cane or a dog. You hear me?
He was hungry.
He was hungry. And he got on a train and sat next to someone who was coming to Chicago. When you take one step, he'll take two. Come on, somebody. Well, and this guy, they struck up a conversation. And when they got to Chicago, this guy put him in a cab. When he got to the Hyatt Hotel downtown and got out the car, and he said to whoever was in front of him, I'm here to see Les Brown. And all of the guys there knew me. And they brought him in, held his hand, and put him on the escalator. And they said, you'll hear his voice upstairs at the top of the steps. And he followed my voice and came in the room. And eventually I saw him and we talked. And I said, can you see? He said, no. I said, who's with you? He said, no one. Do you have a dog? He said, no. Cane? No. He said, I wanted to hear you in person. I said, man, what faith. He said, you said you got to be hungry. I'm hungry for another life. I don't want to be outside of a Walgreen with a cup in my hand asking somebody to have mercy for me and give me some nickels or pennies. I want to change people's lives. I said, man, you have strengthened my faith. And he joined the class. And, and we had that relationship for over 20 years.
Yeah.
That has been inspirational. He did a seminar called How to Earn Over $200,000 a Year with Your Eyes Closed.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember when he came to that event.
Yes.
And I was like, he ain't blind. So I spent the rest of that day watching him to see if he's going to walk into a wall.
No, oh my God, Valerie, you ain't right. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Yeah, man.
He was like, yes, Valerie's blind. I said, no, I got to see this because I just couldn't believe it. But he was hungry.
He was hungry. There's no question. Yeah, he has been most encouraging to me.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, we're about to wrap up, but I have enjoyed this hour with you. And I thank you so much for taking the time. And you even went on your website talking about, hello, I'm on, I'm live.
I think I might go on because now you got me so fired up I can't sleep. So
you have to be up 8 o'clock in the morning for an event. So,
oh, that's right. Hey, Dr. JR, thank you again for your belt. So I didn't have to stand up and pull my pants up from my ankles and allow people to see my Mickey Mouse underwear again. Thank you so much, my brother. I appreciate you. I owe you big time. I'll give you a bean pie.
Yeah, so those of you that are watching, and if we ever get a chance to be in a live event, and you know when Mr. Brown is acting up, this is what I do to him.
Yeah. I will punch you in your eye.
When he's going over, I just do like this.
Oh, boy, who would have believed 26 years?
Wow. Yeah, it has been an awesome journey, and I thank you for being who you are. And you've not changed in all the years I've known you. If anything, you've gotten better. So I do appreciate you and thank you. And I do want to know how you get that hair done, man.
Yeah, I want
to work on it.
Thicklin, would you close us out with prayer, please, sir?
Absolutely.
Yes. And Father, remember, God, he's doing his sermon on Sunday mornings at 10 o'clock on Les Brown's page.
Okay.
That's great. All right. Okay.
Father God, we thank you for this night. We thank you for this hour of inspiration, this hour of power. We thank you for what you have shared with us, nuggets that will transform our lives. Now, God, I ask that you would go with us and let us that have heard, let us be transformed. Let us apply that which we heard. We lift up right now Les Brown and the powerful ministry that you've given him, that even as he go forth, that he will continue to touch lives and lives will continue to be transformed as a result of his obedience. I thank you today because of the fact that he has spread the gospel of hope, the gospel of transformation, that lives will not be the same. Now bless our time together. Bless us as we go forth, and bless those that hear, for they shall be transformed and changed. We ask your blessing now, and we give you glory now in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Amen.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Good night. God bless. See you at 8 o'clock.
Thank you. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.
For now. Yes.